Hello and welcome to Coastal Cafe. My name is Aaron Barnett. I'm your host today here on KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend. Coastal Cafe is a joint production of the University of Washington Sea Grant Program and KPTZ. And today we're talking with Dale Jensen. Dale is the director of Washington State Department of Ecology's Oil Spills Prevention Program. Is that right?
Yes, the Oil Spills Prevention, Preparedness, and Response Program, Aaron.
All right. Well, Dale, could you tell me a little bit about what the scope and responsibility of the program is?
Yeah, the scope of this program, I mean, it is a very exciting program to be a part of, and of course, a lot of responsibility comes with that. The folks in this program are awesome to work with, and our big focus is on prevention is the number one priority. We focus on large volumes of oil moving in the state by three modes of transportation. So it's by vessel, by rail, by pipeline, and then the oil handling facilities. That's our primary focus. So we move about 20 billion gallons of oil around this state every year, and we appreciate one of the lowest spill volumes in the nation. And to reach that target, zero spill goal that was directed to us in the mid-2000s by the legislature is a goal that we continue to try to strive for. But of course, in striving towards that goal, it takes a system. It takes a system of not only the Department of Ecology, but our federal, state, local, tribal, and industry partners to make that happen.
So when was this spills program created? Was it after Exxon Valdez?
The spills program itself here at the Department of Ecology was created in 1997. But interestingly, I think the spills program, as part of the Department of Ecology, which now we're facing, the Department of Ecology this year will be celebrating our 50th anniversary as an agency. So we're beginning to do our work there. Spill response has always been a part of that. So over the years, ecology was always responding to spills, but it really wasn't until Exxon Valdez and just prior to that that we had some major spills in our state that really began to focus the attention more on prevention. In the late 80s, 1988, we had the Nestucca spill, which was a couple hundred thousand gallons off of Grays Harbor, off our outer coast, that impacted our friends in Canada, that really brought about the beginning steps of formalizing a relationship with us in Canada. And then Exxon Valdez occurred shortly after. Alaska, Oregon, California, and Hawaii then joined the Pacific States British Columbia Oil Spill Task Force. So there, it really did form that collaborative relationship around oil spill prevention as the primary attribute.
Yeah, I understand that an element of that is the vessel inspection program. Could you talk a little bit about that and what it looks like?
Yeah, we do. It interestingly, it was, as I mentioned, the Oil Spill Prevention Preparedness Response Program was established in 97 here at the Department of Ecology. But following Open 90, there was the Office of Marine Safety was established and had to focus on the marine side where the vessel inspection program is in place. So that began in the early 90s, and then when that agency was formed into the Department of Ecology and became this program, the inspection work continued, and the focus on our vessel inspection, you know, work is on high-risk vessels. So we look at vessels that are entering our marine waters, whether it's into Puget Sound or on the Columbia River, first-time entry. It doesn't necessarily mean that those vessels are risky vessels, but we do believe that face time with those vessels when they come into our waters provides for the opportunity to help them understand our regulations, understand the importance of prevention, understand that our public has huge expectations of us all and how we safely move oil.
So these vessels could even be a container ship all the way down to a towing vessel?
Absolutely. And with our focus being on regulated vessels, thanks for bringing that up about the cargo vessels, the non-tank vessels, because they can now, they're getting larger and larger and larger. When I came to this program, you know, over 18 years ago, we were talking about volumes in the few hundred thousand gallons of fuel on board the non-tank ships. But now we're looking at millions of gallons that they carry for as fuel for propulsion. So there still is you know, the consequences get higher and higher with those vessels. The probability is very low because many of those vessels have intertank systems. But the important thing is that no matter what, whether it's a cargo vessel or a large tank ship or it's an articulated tug and barge or it's a tug towing barge of oil, any one of them have the very high consequence impact if a spill were to occur. So you really want to emphasize the importance of prevention. And those systems and the design standards are getting better and better and better all the time. The safety systems that are in place continue to help prevent, you know, spills from occurring, whether it's regulatory or it's self-imposed by the companies themselves. Nobody wants to spill oil.
So it sounds like Washington State, Puget Sound in particular, is pretty well prepared to prevent a catastrophic spill. Now, if a catastrophic spill were to happen, what would that response from ecology as part of the response team look like?
Yeah, we have a very robust oil spill preparedness portion of our program where companies that handle large volumes of oil have to have oil spill contingency plans in place. Those plans are drilled, they're exercised, there are geographic response strategies that are pre-designed that identify cultural, historical, economic impacts, so those strategies can be put in place. They're tested all the time. But the other thing, because of the high expectations that our public has here in the state of Washington, we have very strong policies, very strong standards, very high expectations. So companies that operate here often bring their response teams from all over the world to train and exercise here because they believe that they can be at their best level by coming here, being a part of our drills and exercises, learning and training. We all learn and train from each other, and that outcome leads towards our zero spill goal.
Wow, that's remarkable, especially considering you can't just put a bunch of oil in the water to practice with.
No. Historically, many, many years ago, before my time, that was even an idea about actually putting oil in the water to test the skills and the capability of recovery, which is rather ironic when you think about it. So now it really is, those drills and exercises are, there's a standard, or there is a scenario that is developed that is exercised too, and unified command is developed, and there is federal on-scene coordinator, there's a state on-scene coordinator, there's a local on-scene coordinator, there's a tribal on-scene coordinator, and the industry that comes together to manage that spill scenario, but also when a spill occurs, that same unified effort is made to aggressively contain the source and minimize the impacts to the environment.
If you're just joining us, this is KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and I'm Aaron Barnett, today's host of Coastal Cafe. We're back here with Dale Jensen, Department of Ecology's Oil Spill Preparedness Program. So can you talk about your role with the 2019 legislation of reducing the threats to the southern resident killer whale population?
Yes. Well, this is an issue that has been a concern for some time. Our governor put out an executive order with the expectation that every effort could be made to reduce the threats to southern resident killer whales here in Puget Sound. Our resident killer whales are very, very precious to our public and, of course, the tourists that come here to see and appreciate, you know, the southern resident killer whales. So we were asked to identify ways that we could minimize the impacts to orca. And for the spills program itself, what we did put in place is we had a vessel of opportunity program for responding to oil spills, where we might bring in different types of vessels that can assist in an oil spill response. So what we thought about was the opportunity to bring in the organizations that provide for whale watching. and we would expand our vessel of opportunity program to allow for whale watching vessels to be able to be used for deterring orca. So we've developed a training program. We've just recently finished a rule where the contingency plan holders will be putting in place as part of their plan this deterrent opportunity. So what will happen through our Spills 101 website, the whale watching organizations will be able to register, and then they will be able to be trained in access to help deter whales. What's happening in addition to that that's really pretty exciting is that when a spill occurs, we work closely with NOAA to identify the location of the southern resident killer whale, and we can determine whether they could be threatened by the spill in that area or not. There is a system that then rolls out to address and deter, you know, the whales from the potential exposure to that oil.
What are the mechanisms used to deter? Is it just putting a boat in front of them and trying to herding them like cattle? Is there some sound device or something like that?
There are different mechanisms that are being that can be used for that. There's different technology that's being used, but there are pipes that are put down in the water that can be sound.
Okay.
Sound deterrents they put in the water that do sound. Our Department of Fish and Wildlife, is leading that directive. But there's also different types of technology that are being considered. But the big thing is to, figure out ways to deter the whales in a way that doesn't harm them.
So now, when you say vessel of opportunity in the whale watching industry, that means you're arming and equipping the boats that are out there all the time with the whales with these things that they need to keep them away from potential oil. Do you do that? Do you offer that to recreational boaters as well, or do they have to be an established company or something like that?
Yeah, I think the primary expectation is to access those companies that have experience and really understand the behavior of the southern resident killer whales so they can properly be trained to use the capability to deter them. We want to make sure that whoever is working to deter them is well-trained and really understand the importance of the methodology that they're using under the guidance of the Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Okay. You talked about killer whales, the new focus on protecting the southern resident killer whale population, the vessel inspections. Are there any past successes you'd like to highlight while we're here?
I think there have been a number of successes over time. I mean, it's been a very exciting program to be a part of and to continue to help and grow and build. And what has happened is we've had many advances in the program over the years and the work that we do here in the state of Washington. It's been a variety of things. As I talked earlier about the marine side, vessel operations, rail, crude by rail, and pipeline as being the primary transportation sources. Our primary focus early on in this program was on the marine side, so it really was in the vessel side. So we have advances in understanding how much oil comes in and out of our state through our advanced notice of transfer information that's provided by the three modes of transportation to the facility that reports that information. So we have a better understanding of the different changes, if there's increase in the amount of volume of product that's being brought in by vessel or by rail or by pipeline. We can see those changes over time, and we have some good data to show that. We have oil spill contingency plans for rail operators in our state. So as they're moving oil through our state, they have to have oil spill contingency plans. They have to test those plans, just as we always have with the oil transfer facilities and on the vessel side. Pipeline's the same over the years. When the Bellingham pipeline explosion occurred in 1999, that was a big step up in the amount of attention and the safety around how oil pipelines are operated safely and how oil is moved through them. So I see those measures and bringing in the system, the closed system, and really understanding the oil movement and behavior has been really, really important. we continue to advance the technology and the capability. We learn from spills that not only happen in our state, but happen in other places. Deepwater Horizon drove huge investments in the kind of technology that we were able to have here in the state of Washington that allowed for 24/7 spill response. So even many years ago, there wasn't technology really available that allowed for 24/7 operations. So when it became dark, the spill response often, you know, stopped. Where now we're operating continually through the cycle to minimize the impacts to the environment and recover oil if it's spilled. So technology is a big thing. We've also continued to learn more and more about oil spill behavior. So before, we always focused on spills to the surface, and we wanted to make sure that we had the best available technology here in our state to recover oil from the surface. We have a rapid, aggressive, well-coordinated response posture that we have used here in the state of Washington that has begun to benefit our broader, you know, partners. We all operate under that same philosophy through our Northwest Area Committee planning process, which is Washington, Idaho, and Oregon. So that area planning process has really benefited by the posture and the policies that we have in place. So we also have not only been focused on the surface impacts, but now we're delving into understanding how oil behaves in the subsurface environment. So we're doing more and more work on understanding oil behavior as sinks or submerges. The oil spill contingency plans have procedures in place that we test to demonstrate how oil can be recovered in the subsurface environment. So it's something that we're continuing to learn and grow with. But one thing about oil behavior and what I've seen over all the years that I've been a part of this is the significant improvement in response capability, in technology, understanding oil spill behavior, but also understanding the catastrophic impacts if a spill occurs. It has very significant impacts to our environment and our economy, impacts of billions of dollars, and impacts on, you know, thousands of people should a major oil spill occur here in our marine waters. So again, we want to do every single thing that we can to prevent spills from occurring, and we also appreciate the high expectations our public has of us and the incredible support that our legislature and our director and our governor's office has had to continue to support our work and advance our capability here in the state of Washington. And I want to thank our response partners too. You know, we can't do this alone. This really does take our federal, local, other state partners, our tribal partners, and the industry to make this happen. Nobody wants to see a spill occur. And we continue to advance those partnerships. I think even more so, our work in the transboundary environments has really increased over the last, you know, number of years, where we're pretty excited about the investments that our counterpart in Canada is making to put in place very strong spill prevention, preparedness, response, you know, capability. We've always wanted comparable capability in our state. In our transboundary environment, we see Canadian investment as improving in that direction, and a lot of collaboration in the transboundary environment to protect our shared waters and the shared resources, and keeping our environment safe and our economy strong.
What kind of things are being invested in the transboundary environment? Like specifically, what does the collaborative relation look like? Is this like collaboration between the Coast Guard's Vessel Traffic Service and Canadian Coast Guard traffic? Is that?
I think there's always been a lot of collaboration at the federal level between our federal Coast Guard partners and our Canadian federal partners. I think there's also been strong collaboration involving both British Columbia and the state of Washington in the work in the transboundary environment. We all learn from each other. We all have different responsibilities and capabilities that we bring to it. I think that what we're seeing now, and even coming out of the recent legislation, is further direction around enhancing safety with vessel traffic, you know, movement. And at the state level, through the Board of Pilot Education Commission, there is now implementation of tech escort requirements in Rosario Strait on vessels in the range of 5 to 40,000 deadweight tons. So in the past, tug escort requirements were on vessels in the range of 40 to 125,000 deadweight tons. So now this is expanded. It means more tug escorts on the water. We believe it leads to a higher level of safety. So that's one thing that will be implemented now later this fall, September of 2020. So we're looking forward to that. There's also other zones that are going to be identified in our shared waters where we'll be looking at other safety measures that can be put in place. Here at the Department of Ecology Spills Program, we'll be developing modeling capability that will inform risk measures that could be put in place that could inform a future rulemaking that the Board of Pilot Education Commission will be doing. But it really does help to identify what kind of safety measures can be put in place that can continue to prevent spills from occurring. What we're seeing on the Canadian side, as we've seen on the U.S. side, as I mentioned earlier, that from a response standpoint, response technology capability in our state is probably on the leading edge in the nation. We have the best technology here. We have the best capability here. We continue to strive to have that best here. Canada is now doing the same. They're beginning to build out through their oceans protection planning process and through the efforts that they're making with the build-out of the proposed pipeline expansion in Canada, enhanced response capability. So we're going to see more and more capability in our shared waters where we come together during a response, where we can protect each other from spills that occur on either side of the border. But the bigger thing is that we'll be doing it in a collaborative way, but I think the capability will be, continues to get better and better.
You know, I would imagine that when most people, or let's say the public, thinks about an oil spill, they think of a catastrophic spill. Mm-hmm. And I understand that in Puget Sound, the biggest source of spills on a chronic basis comes from small vessels, small recreational and commercial vessels. Is that true?
It is true. I mean, we respond to over 4,000 reported spills a year here in the state of Washington. Most of them, the highest percentage is still petroleum related, but yes, most of them are from small recreational vessels or commercial fishing vessels. We would like to see that number continue to come down. The focus of our program is on large volumes of oil, so that's where our prevention and preparedness planning work is focused on. But on the response side of our program, we respond to those small spills that come from those entities that we do not regulate. And so the more that we can do, small spills, multiple small spills, you know, still lead up to, you know, large impacts. And even though I've said we have one of the lowest spill volumes in the nation, there's still a fair amount of oil that gets spilled into the precious mm-hmm. waters that we want to continue to preserve.
Interesting. So we're going to close here in a few minutes, but is there anything you'd like to talk about that you'd like to really highlight, something that you've been doing that you're very proud of here?
Yeah, I think the what I would like to really highlight is we can't do it alone. It really does take all of us together. And the more collaborative we are, the more that we do to support each other towards a common goal of reaching zero spills, the better off we'll all be, and the better off the state of Washington will be.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Dale. This is Aaron Barnett, and you've been listening to Coastal Cafe, a joint production of Washington Sea Grant at the UW College of the Environment and KPTZ 91.9 FM. Washington Sea Grant helps people and marine life thrive by providing research, technical expertise, and education that supports the conservation of our ocean and coastlines. I'd like to thank our program director, Larry Stein, and production engineer, Jared Dufresne. And as always, a special shout-out to our friends in the band Ku Ich for sharing their music with us at the opening and closing of this program. Thank you for listening, and have a good day.